When your ideal customer's kids are begging every night to read your book, you've won. At Dinosaur House, we turn industry leaders into kids' book authors. We don't do it because it's a super fun thing to do, although it is. We do it because it's highly strategic. Imagine if every night your customers are being asked by their kids to read a book that your company made. Talk about brand affinity. You're helping your customers connect deeply with the most important thing in their lives, their kids, over something that they are passionate about that has to do with your industry. If you want to have a conversation with us about how your brand could become the author of a kid's book, just hit us up, dinosaurhouse.com. Hit the little button that says schedule a story design call. And we'll have a jam session together on just what your company's kids book could and should be.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Yael Jaffe. I am a specialist in a field called nutrigenomics, which is nutrition and genetics, and have founded a company called 3x4 Genetics. And you are listening to The Purpose Driven Entrepreneur.
What's up, purpose-driven entrepreneurs? It's me, your host, Timmy Bauer, and my guest today is Yael Jaffe. Yael, thank you so much for being a guest on the show.
Hi, Tim. Great to be here.
I'm really excited to talk to you. Just before we get started and I ask you some of the bigger questions I have for you, if you could give our listeners some context by letting us know a little bit about your business. So specifically, how does your business, your current business, operate? Like what it is that you sell and to who? When did you start it and what's been your growth?
Okay, this business is called 3x4 Genetics. We started it in beginning of 2018. And we are a genetics business. We build and sell diet and lifestyle genetic tests. So a genetic test that helps health professionals like dietitians and doctors and naturopaths figure out what is the most personalized diet and lifestyle plan for their patients. So that is in essence what we do. We work with about well over 1,000 practitioners around the US who we teach and train and mentor and educate to be able to work with genetics in their practice. That's what we do at 3x4. So we started actually in Cape Town, South Africa, where I'm from, 4 years ago, and started the business really as a, well, to be honest, I started the business because I was so dissatisfied with what I was seeing in the marketplace.
Okay.
So I've been in the world of genetics for 21 years now, and I've been part of many startups in genetic testing, built an education company called Manuka, teaching health professionals about genetics and how to use it, ran a clinic for 4 years, and kind of got to the point where it's like, we really haven't done a great job. You know, we kind of overpromised and underdelivered in the genetic space. So it was like a feeling of, you know, do I get out of this and step out and say, thank you very much. It's been a great run, but it's not really worked out the way I wanted. Or do I have like one more big go at it where I try and fix everything that I'm unhappy about? And that in essence is 3x4 Genetics.
So what was it that you were so dissatisfied by? In what ways did you feel like genetic, like the market had failed?
So without talking about the science, because it's really not that interesting to talk about the science right now, but what had happened in the genetic space is in 2003, the Human Genome Code was kind of launched into the world. And there was this great dream how genetics was going to change healthcare. Both at a personal level, but also just healthcare in general. Mm-hmm. And that if we understood who we were and we understood our own code, we could really make some brilliant decisions. And what happened was there's been a couple of really big companies like 23andMe and Ancestry.com who have grown really, really big companies doing what we call ancestry genetic testing, which is like, where did you come from? Who's your cousin? Are you related? And the problem is that we built this amazing technology that can test lots and lots and lots of genes, but we never figured out how to create value for people. So just because you can test something doesn't mean you probably should.
Yeah.
And what you really want to do is make sure that the human experience is valuable, that when you experience your own genetics, it adds value to your life and it changes something for you and it drives something for you. And what's happened over the two decades is we've seen, I call it the mushroom effect, where every single day that I wake up, I see another genetic testing company in the marketplace, or the copy and paste effect, where people are launching genetic companies daily because it's the new thing. You know, it's exciting, it's tech, it's healthcare, everyone's talking about genetics. But the problem is that we were kind of talking to ourselves. So launching hundreds of genetic companies, but not really changing people's lives. And for me, that was my great epiphany of, we've been working so hard for like 15 years in this space, but a lot of it, we've like been talking to ourselves how clever the science is, how clever the testing is, but not thinking about how did it change your life and did it change your life? Because otherwise, what I believe we've been doing for 15 years is selling data.
Yeah.
And data by itself is not valuable.
What do you think is possible in terms of the kind of value that could be provided by a genetics testing like company, like a, you know, where they take a sample of your DNA?
I think that the solution that I was looking for to try and fix all the what I just mentioned now was twofold. So one was, you can't just fix a genetic test, you have to fix the industry, which I'll talk about a little bit more. And the other one was, you have to consider the user experience. Now, when you're a geneticist and a scientist, no one teaches you about user experience at all.
Right?
So what
no,
the first
no
three
one
companies
teaches
that
very,
I...
There's very few people that ever get any education on user experience.
On UX, exactly. Yeah. Except for people who are, that's what they do, UX,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
So I had been part of three startups building genetic tests. And in all the companies I'd been a part of, as a scientist, we built the product as a scientist. Now, there's nothing worse than asking a scientist to build a product, right? Okay. Because they have like no idea of what someone feels when they engage with the information that you're giving them. They're only concerned with the data. Hmm. So the first thing that I did when I had this idea of building a new company, well, there were twofold. The first thing is I formed a partnership with a gamification company.
Okay.
And this gamification company was called Sea Monster. And they specialized in behavioral change. So using gamification to change behavior, a lot of education stuff for grownups and children. And basically what I said to them is like, I've got this like content knowledge. Like I know this stuff, but I have no idea how to communicate it in such a way that either a health professional, a doctor or a dietitian would be excited to work with it. And most importantly, that a consumer would be excited to engage with it. And so the first thing I did differently from the 20 years before is form this amazing partnership. And we based all our principles on UX and on user experience and on design thinking. And yeah. So we changed. And what I did, which took huge amounts of courage after 20 years, is step away. So I had to be very brave and say, you know what, I'll do the science, but I'm not going to drive the product. I'm going to let you guys drive the product. Mm. And so that was the one really big change for me, which has been amazing. You know, there was a time in the company we had more designers than we had scientists. Now we have more scientists, but there was a time where we had like two scientists and three designers, which just shows how we kind of shifted the priority. And the other comment I made was, you can't just fix, like in our case, you couldn't just fix a genetic test because the context of it was flawed. So what I mean by that is I could build the most beautiful UX experience, great report, beautiful science, fantastic. But if you're a doctor and you have no idea how to read the report, you don't know whether to trust the report. You don't know how to integrate the report into your patient's life. You don't know what recommendations to give your patient. And you don't know where to go to ask hard questions. Then it's pointless. You know, then you're like building one pillar of a house and one, like, there's no foundation. So one of the things I realized is I couldn't just fix the test and the report. I actually had to fix the ecosystem of genetic testing. And that meant education. So which was great because my background was teaching education. So I took my education company and I brought it into 3x4. So we have a whole division that is just about education. And then I built a program, which is also very unique, on mentorship. That you can, and with your background, I'm sure you completely understand that you can teach something in terms of content, but when you have to start using the content, it's a different experience. So in our world, like just doing a 10-module course is great, but when your patient's sitting in front of you and you're sitting with your first genetic test and you've got to figure out what to do with that information, what you need is a mentor. So someone who's going to sit with you and hold your hand and nurture you and grow you and walk the journey with you to make sure that you can become more than you started out. So we built education. We built a mentorship program, which is very big and very successful. And then lastly, which sounds cliched, but it's so important, is community. So this field of nutrition and genetics is not mainstream. It's grown hugely, but it's not mainstream. So if you're like me and you started 20 years ago, I was totally alone. I had no one to talk to. I had no one to discuss it with. I had no one to bounce ideas off. So for me, the fourth element of trying to solve this problem was building a community where people could go that they could trust, feel safe, ask questions, find peers and colleagues, co-workers. And so those are the two real kind of foundational things of what I did differently this time than things that I've done before.
I failed to ask you this question, but just so I'm clear, who's the customer of this product? Is it doctors?
Yeah, so for us, the customer is the health professional, the doctor, dietitian, naturopath, chiropractor.
Yeah.
So we don't directly market to the patient or the client. We have our customer is, so we call it like, it's not B2C and it's not B2B. It's like B2P, business to practitioner. And then they're selling it on to their clients.
Got it. So you've been building a community of these practitioners and basically all your education focus has been towards them and getting them mentors. What's been the most challenging thing about building this business that you're surprised at how challenging it was?
Wow, that's a great question. You mean aside from getting funding, aside from that?
Which, I have no idea what it's like to try to get funding.
Okay, so that's really tough. What's been the toughest thing? You know,
what were you surprised was tough about getting funding?
How many conversations I had to have, my God, like, getting, understanding that when someone says that they love your idea and they think you're amazing, doesn't actually mean, oh yes, I'm going to invest.
I'm
going to
get it's not money. A sale.
So, I was very naive.
I've had to learn that lesson.
It's like, okay, don't believe everything everyone tells you. So I think, I mean, that was the hardest part, is finding someone to believe in me, because I didn't have a product. I had an idea. And I had to get investors based just believing in me, just in me, believing that I could execute what my idea was, because I didn't even have a product. And so that was a very hard journey. And you know, when you look back and you think how I was literally 1 month away from giving up. I had been like for a year and a half trying to find an angel investor. And I was literally on my last month when I found the most wonderful angel investor, which kind of got me off the ground. Once you got an angel investor, you can build a product. And once you got a product, it's much easier to go and find, you know, seed funding, to get proper funding.
Where were you in the process when you were really a month away from giving up? Like where was that? What year was that? And what had you done so far?
That was end of 2017. And I had built out the idea. I'd formed the partnership with the UX gamification company, but So we had a conceptual idea of the product, but we had no product because we had no money to build the product.
Yeah.
So the hardest thing is to get funding when you don't have a product and you just have an idea. And in a marketplace where there are 300-400 companies who are competing with you. So for me, that was the hardest part, is making them believe that we could execute on an idea that wasn't a product and put money into it. So the first year was, the first year obviously finding funding, and then the first year of building it was really tough because you need to get to market really quickly. You got to find a market. It was, and you know, even though I've been involved in lots of startups, this was the first one that was literally mine from start, like ground up. You know, it was.
Yeah.
I've been in other companies where I was employed in, like I was the second employee, but I've never been the first. And so I think I was really naive around just how tough it is to get a, how expensive it is to build a business and to get people to believe in you, finding the right people to work with you, is a huge learning journey of what really makes for good people. And it's not their CV. Time has taught me, you know, it's not the degrees that they have. So I've learned a lot over the last 4 years about, you know, what makes for a great employee. But I think, you know, the thing that also I didn't see coming was the kind of roller coaster ride of it, you know, that it never kind of ends, a roller coaster. So you have a tough 3-4 months where everything is hard. You know, the product's hard, you got problems with the technology, the lab isn't delivering, the employees are off sick, whatever, like everything's tough, you're running out of money, and then suddenly like something good and beautiful happens and you kind of pick up and you fly, and then you think, this is fantastic, I've got a great business, and then you like hit another roller coaster. So I think that in the beginning that I didn't see that coming. Now I just expect it, so I kind of roll with the punches now because I know that if I just keep on driving, you know. And we've had some amazing growth over the last year. Like the last year has been fantastic for us.
That's awesome.
And I think that, yeah, that we were in a really bad way a year ago where our leadership was very poor. We had a lot of issues. And again, you know, when you get to that roller coaster, that kind of wall, and you think, I don't know if I can do this. Like, this has got so hard. And we were talking about it today and looking back and saying, I cannot believe what we've accomplished in a year when we just put the right leadership in place, the right staff, gave the right responsibility, the right people. And I guess that's why I like entrepreneurship. And I guess that's why I like startups, is because there's always that chance of fixing things.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, I get more excited by problems than I get demoralized by them, but I still have those moments. Like especially, I can especially relate to money is running out, no new customers. Well, I guess this thing's just gonna die.
Yeah. I've had many of those. I was like, how do we actually get to January? Like, who's paying salaries in December? And you think you're never going to get through, like you cannot figure out how you're going to get through. And I have to say, like, even with success, it doesn't go away, because with success comes growth, and with growth, you spend more money. And then suddenly you're like, oh, we've got enough money until December again.
Yeah.
So I've realized, like, the part where you're looking for funding or money or profitability or revenue, it never goes away. It doesn't matter on the success of your company. That part of growing a business never goes away. So I think once you like befriend it and say, okay, this is my life. But also you stop believing in yourself and you say, well, I've got through 4 years of it now. And actually we've got some proper growth now. So maybe actually this company is going to survive and we're not going to disappear.
Yeah, agreed. So I started this podcast because I thought it would be cool to ask purpose-driven entrepreneurs what they're really living their life for. When you think about the question, like, what do I want to be remembered for when I die? Or what is it that I'm really living my life for? What jumps out to you as important?
So I think, you know, the reason I started in this, I was studying architecture. I was going to be an architect. I love art. And my grand died from cancer. So I dropped out of architecture and I made a decision that I was going to go do something where I could try to figure out why she died from cancer, how we could have prevented it. And I spent the first 10, 15 years kind of searching for answers on trying to understand that. So I was very purpose-driven for the first decade and a half. I knew of not finding the answer, but seeking the answer. I was very purpose-driven in what I was looking for. And it took me a very long time to get to a point where I actually felt like I had enough answers that I could stop the searching and just build something.
Okay.
And so it for me, it was always about there's something wrong with the paradigm of the way that we're doing things. So I studied to be a dietitian and I hated it. I left architecture, went to be a dietitian and hated it.
What sucked about it?
And I knew there was something, everything, well, at that day, everything, it's a little bit improved now, but not much, but a little bit.
Okay.
But
okay.
Basically the nutrition they were teaching was not about health.
Okay.
So I was looking to learn about how do we drive health, how to prevent disease. And in my 3 weeks into a lecture, they were like, if you're a patient in a hospital, you can give them chocolate cake and ice cream. And I was like, I gave up architecture to do a degree in like dietetics and be told to give my patients chocolate cake and ice cream when they're sick. And I was like, there's something so wrong here.
Yeah.
So I have been very driven to redefine nutrition. So part of it was by my gran. And try to solve the kind of cancer issue, which I'm not going to solve alone, but I contribute my little piece. But a lot of it was about realizing that nutrition and the profession of dietetics was actually wrong, just that, wrong. And how do we create a new nutrition? How do we create a whole new world where we learn nutrition in a different way, teach in a different way, practice it in a different way? Now, that is quite a big ask, but actually, I think it's very doable. So when you ask me like, what is the thing that I want to be known for? It's so the word impact has always been my word. Like I really want to have impact on people's lives. And it could be a patient who does a genetic test, who changes their diet and lifestyle and lives a completely more beautiful and energetic and happy life and healthy life. Is the one part. So on it, but the other part is that I really impact the field of nutrition, that I kind of offer an alternative to what I was offered and give hope to the next generations of people who were like me 30 years ago, who were looking to use nutrition to drive health. And so it kind of works on two levels, an individual level, but also redefining nutrition in health. And we're starting to see that happen now.
That's very exciting. So we're coming up to the end here. I've got two for fun questions that I want to ask you, Yael.
Okay.
So, the first one is, I'm a kids book author. I believe that part of leaving a legacy is reaching kids. What's a topic or idea you'd make a kids book about if you could?
Swimming.
You'd make a kids book about swimming?
Swimming in the ocean. Absolutely. Totally.
Why?
So the only thing I love more than genetics is swimming in the ocean. And I think that swimming in the ocean is one of the most powerful and healing and just incredible things that we can do in this world. And in fact, there's some beautiful books out there about people who've taken on challenges of being in the ocean and swimming in the cold water and the currents. And it is so healing, whether you're a child suffering from anxiety, depression, loneliness, it's or a grown up. So if I was going to do anything, it would be about a book trying to get people to embrace the ocean.
Yeah. I wonder what it is about the ocean that does that. Because just yesterday I live in Florida. We went to the ocean. So me and my wife, we were really stressed out. We're trying to figure out some accounting stuff. And the accountant that we were going to visit was near the beach. And I was like, let's just go to the beach. We're here. We might as well just go see the ocean. Sure enough, we go spend an hour walking along the beach. We're leaving. All the stress is gone. We're like apologizing to each other for the way we talk to each other. I'm like, what is it about the ocean that does that? But I knew it would do that.
And that's without even getting in the ocean, right? That was just walking next to the ocean.
Listen,
we could do a whole podcast about the ocean, but I really do believe that, and in Florida, the water is too warm. You need cold water is even better, I have to tell you.
You think so? Okay.
Oh God, it's so
boring. I know a lot of friends that would disagree. Yeah, oh, we do have cold water though. I
swim in the Atlantic Ocean.
Okay.
Do you?
There's a bunch of springs, like natural springs in Florida. And it's one of my favorite things to do, to go to a natural spring. And you can actually swim with manatees just in the wild in the springs here in Florida. And the water is like 69 degrees. It's like, it just comes out of the ground cold.
That sounds amazing. I have to do that. You have to tell me where to go do that. I got to put that on my bucket list. That sounds amazing. So that's healing, right?
That it's one of my favorite things to do.
As described, right?
Yeah. My last for fun question for you is, what is something that you currently suck at that a year from now you want to be great at?
Gosh.
What'd you say?
There's so many things. It's got to be parenting. It's just got to be parenting. It's so hard.
The kids?
So my kids are 8 and 12. And I work very hard at parenting, but I tell you what, like being an entrepreneur and starting a business, starting 5 businesses is always going to be easier than being a parent. So there is a constant drive for me to be a better parent, particularly when you're getting into the teenage years. So that for me is the thing that I suck at it, but it is hard. And I need to get better and better every year.
As a kid's book author, what do you think is one of the hardest things about parenting that you think a kid's book could help with? This is going to be valuable for me to know.
Well, gender identity. Okay.
Got it.
It's so big at the moment, and the anxiety that surrounds. So identity, let's just say identity. What I'm seeing is because of the exposure to social media and technology, there is a real sense of who am I, because of there's so many choices of who they can be, and the angst and anxiety that comes with that identity. So gender is one of it, but it's not the only one. So for me, I think finding identity, finding who you are and defining who you are is the greatest challenge that children are facing. And it's not just at 12, 13, 14, 15. I think it's starting younger.
Yeah. What an interesting conversation. Yael, thank you so much for being a guest on my show. Where are you most active on social, and how would you like listeners to connect with you?
Where am I? I have a website, obviously 3x4, and then the letter X, number 4, genetics.com. I think I'm on Instagram. It's Yael Jaffe, just YaelJoffe. I'm on LinkedIn. You can find me any of those places.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being on my show.
Brilliant. Thanks, Timmy. It was a lovely conversation. Enjoyed it.
Same.